The lessons that are given by Moses can be applied to every facet of life, to look at the things that he did that made him pleasing to God. The first of those I want us to think about this morning is how Moses defeated the problem of pride, with the help of the Lord, of course, in that battle. Moses had a very intriguing upbringing, we know that. About to be killed, his parents hid him, and he was raised within the palace of Pharaoh. We understand that. And as a part of that raising, it actually put him in a somewhat dangerous position. Here he was within the house of Pharaoh, and he was much more privileged than any Israelite child would have been as far as material possessions were concerned. In fact, the Hebrew writer tells us a little bit about that. He says, on the positive side, talking about Moses overcoming, he said, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin, he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Now let's pick out the upbringing part. He was rich. You talk about being the rich kid on the block, that was Moses. Virtually anything that he wanted, he could have had because Pharaoh was considered not only the leader, but the god over Egypt. Therefore, Moses had an extremely privileged background. The writer messenger Stephen takes it a little bit further in Acts chapter 7. Let's break this passage up just a bit. Notice verse 22 to begin with. He says, "And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and his deeds." So not only was Moses wealthy, Moses also had a very good education, being told that he was quite eloquent. He had the best tutors that Egypt could offer. Now, you take all of that together, and that put Moses into a position where he developed an attitude he should not have had. Keep that in mind, and let's look over to Exodus chapter 2. Here is a time as Moses is growing into young adulthood. Exodus tells us he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. When he was out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, "Why did you strike your companion?" He answered, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptians?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely the thing is known." Now here's Moses. He's been trained in the best ways in Egypt. He considers himself wealthy and smart and a good spokesman. And he goes out to meet justice. And his own people, who he thought he was helping, said, "Who made you our prince? Who made you the judge over us?" Now let's go back to Acts chapter 7. Let's pick up with verses 24 and 25. "And seeing one of them being wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian." Now note the next phrase that Stephen says, "He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand." Here was Moses, and he says, "There is something that needs to be done, and I am the man for it. I've got the position, I've got the training, I've got the eloquence, I've got the know-how, I'm going to take care of it," and his own people reject him for that. Now here's an interesting point. God does not visibly intercede. God didn't come down and say to this man who asked, "Who made you judge over us?" God didn't come down and say, "Well, it was me. I did. Moses is my servant." He didn't do that at all. In fact, what he allowed to happen was for Moses to flee to the wilderness and there for the next 40 years transition from princehood to shepherdhood. Why? Because Moses was a proud man. And God knew that that pride had to be defeated. That his background had proved way too dangerous for the things that he had for Moses to do. And thus, after that time of chastening, Moses will return a changed man. And no longer will self-sufficiency characterize his life. You know, he went out to try to do what the Lord eventually wanted him to do. But Moses was trying to do it on his own personal schedule. God said, you are going to wait on me, and I'm going to teach you how to do that. Moses comes back having learned that lesson. I think a passage that bears that out so clearly is Numbers chapter 11. The Lord here is upset with Israel. Let's just pick up with verse 11. Moses said to the Lord, why have you dealt ill with your servant, and why have I not found favor in your sight that you lay the burden of this people on me? Did I conceive all this people? Did I give them birth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing child to the land that you swore to give to their fathers? Now look at what's in bold here. Where am I to get meat to give to these people? For they weep before me and say, give us meat that we may eat. Verse 14, I am not able to carry all this people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you will treat me like this, kill me at once, if I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness. Now, we sometimes approach that passage and we think, well, how negative. Moses isn't looking to God. That is exactly what Moses is doing. Now, it's going to take him a while to get there. But nonetheless, what does he recognize about himself? I can't do this. I don't have the ability to do it. You going to vote for somebody who says that? In the debate, the moderator says, now, candidate X, what are you going to do about this problem? And the candidate says, there's nothing I can do. It's not within my power. We're going to rely on the power of God to do it. He would be laughed off the stage. Why? Because we don't view that as a self-made leader. The man who's got the plan, the one who knows what to do, that when the chips are down, here's the guy you can trust in. Moses says, I am not that guy. Why? Because he defeated pride. And he understood that there was no way that he could do that. And God was satisfied with that answer. And I think throughout the course of his life, we see that he learned how to solve problems. Look for the common denominator here as we go through several passages in Numbers. Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. They fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of all the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you be angry with all the congregation? Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. What's going on here? Moses understands he cannot solve these problems, and the only one who can solve these problems is God. Back when email first came out, someone very cleverly said God communicates through knee-mail. I like that, but let's add one to it. Moses teaches us God also communicates through FaceTime, and that face is flat on the ground in humility, saying, I cannot handle this problem. If I am going to lead your people, you must teach me how to do that. And in those 40 years on the mountain, that's exactly what Moses learned. So what is the message that Moses gives to leaders in the 21st century? To men who are looking to be elders, to parents who are leading a household, whatever situation we're in, what are the lessons that we learn for him? Well, the first is this: pride should have absolutely no appeal to the people of God. That's a hard statement. Because pride is one of the sins that I think every one of us has to keep our foot on its neck every day, saying, I will not allow this to control me, because we like to be recognized. We like for people to notice. And God says, that is not what I want in leaders. The Apostle Paul had to learn this, didn't he? He goes through all of this and he talks about that thorn in the flesh that was given. But look at what's in bold. The Lord says to him, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect where? In weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, calamities. In other words, all the things that destroy pride. all of the things that a prideful person will not allow to happen. Paul says, in those very things I will boast. Because he was a man who, like Moses, could give way to pride. But he said, I have learned that the grace of God is sufficient. And thus, as we think about a man who desires to be an elder for the prestige, that man had never better become an elder. A man who is looking for that because of recognition, because it, at least in his mind, gives him a position of authority that he kind of craves, he better not accept that position. It'll kill him. It'll destroy him. Because he's not learned the Moses message. He's not learned. But yet, even extending beyond someone who's going to be an elder, every Christian must learn that. If I have this grand desire in the workplace or in some kind of social way or some kind of political way for everybody to recognize my greatness and who I am not fit to wear the name of Christ because I'm refusing to allow His grace to be sufficient. I'm refusing to allow Him to shine and let me hold the light for that shining to take place. Let's add with that something that may sound a little strange. Self-sufficiency has no place for God's people. Now, I don't mean that from the fact that we've got to depend on somebody for everything. But it's the idea that we're the ones who are in control. We're the ones who are deciding all of these things. No, that's God's place. We want to be faithful servants. We want to be people who are listening and following. And we never need to come to the point where we're saying, well, A, B, and C is going to happen because I've got this plan, and this plan is going to be carried out this way, and it's going to result in this. No. You think Moses, as a teenager in Egypt, ever thought he would be tending to sheep for 40 years? Absolutely not. And thus, no matter where we are, we do not allow that self-sufficiency to have its place in our lives. Now, that brings us to a very related point. And that's the fact that if we are going to be like Moses, steadfast as Moses was, leaders as Moses was, it means we cannot give place to jealousy. Because certainly jealousy is the evil offspring of pride. If I am a prideful person, I am so jealous of my position that I don't want anybody else to get even close to getting the recognition that I get. And thus, when we are killing off pride, we've got to understand what James says. When he says, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. You hear what he's saying? He's saying if we are these envious, jealous people who are so protective of our position, he says you are a follower of the devil. The wisdom you're using is bubbling up from the pits of hell. I like the fact that James doesn't mince words. And if there's anywhere in the book of James that words are not being minced, it's right here. When he says this kind of attitude is straight from the depths of hell. Thus, when I am willing to destroy pride, I am refusing to give any room for jealousy to grow. I am not going to have that opinion about others, viewing them as rivals. In fact, consider what the Proverbist says in chapter 14, a tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. Let's see how this was carried out in the life of Moses. Go with me over to Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11. And as we look here, we see Moses' admittance of a lack of self-sufficiency. Down in verse 18, God gives him the instruction, say to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow you shall eat meat that you have wept in my hearing of the Lord, saying, who will give us meat to eat? for it was better for us in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall not eat just one day, or 2 days, or 5 days, or 10 days, or 20 days, but the whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and have wept before Him, saying, why did we come out of Egypt? Now, the only thing Moses heard in that is, you're going to give them food. Okay, so keep that in mind. Look on down now to verse 21. Moses said, the people among whom I am number 600,000 on foot. And you have said, I will give them meat that they may eat a whole month. Shall flocks and herds be slaughtered for them and be enough for them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them and be enough for them? Now Moses is going to get a brief rebuke here, but yet look at his lack of self-sufficiency. He doesn't start saying, okay, the Lord has given me this assignment, so I'm going to go to the flocks over in the tribes of Benjamin and Ephraim, and I'm going to take them and we're going to slaughter them. He says, I can't do this, Lord. It's impossible for me. So the Lord answers him. Verse 23, the Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's hand shortened? Now you shall see whether my word will come true or not. So Moses went out and told the people all the words of the Lord, and he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him and took some of the spirit that was on him and put it on the 70 elders. And as soon as the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not continue doing it. All right, now that's our introduction to this. What I really want us to see is the exchange between Joshua and Moses. All right, so all this has happened. Moses is going to take care of the situation by the hand of God. Elders have been given to help Moses in his job here. But look at verse 26. Now two men remained in the camp, one named Eldad and the other Medad, and the Spirit rested on them. They were among those registered, but they had not gone out to the tent, and so they prophesied in the camp. And a young man ran and told Moses, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the assistant to Moses from his youth, said, my Lord Moses, stop them. You ever thought much about that? Joshua had known one leader, and that leader was Moses. He had seen Moses being used by the Lord in all of these big ways. And he says, Moses, you got to cut this business out. Does it sound like Joshua's kind of jealous for his master here? Maybe even a bit jealous of his own position as servant to Moses? But look at what Moses says. Verse 29. Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, and the Lord would put His Spirit on them. Moses said, I wish everybody could do this. You know, the only man who can say that is a man who's not jealous of his position. Now, if Moses had adopted perhaps the mindset Joshua is saying, he said, bring those guys to me. You don't ever do that. That's my job. No. He knew that God's hand was in this, and he knew that this was a work of God for good. And he said, I wish God would expand it. Why? Because there was no jealousy in his heart. So what's his message to leaders? His message to leaders is secure your own relationship with God first and foremost. You know, the only man who can be a non-jealous man in the service of God is the man who's secure in his relationship with God. It's the only one. If he's insecure, if he's viewing other people in the congregation as rivals, he'll be a disaster. He'll make that church a disaster. So a man who desires to be an elder must look and he must say, I am not going to allow this to happen. And who better illustrates that than Jesus Christ? I think about the time when he was washing the disciples' feet. I've put two verses together here. Understand that. There's some important stuff in between. But John says Jesus knew that the hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Jesus knew who he was. There's no insecurity. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet. The disciples complain. They don't like this. Here is their master doing the work of a menial servant. And Jesus says, you got to understand something. I know who I am. I know my relationship with God, and because of that, I can be a servant. And that's the message his prideful apostles had to learn, and I believe they did. When we see their lives being carried out, they did exactly what their master had taught them to do. And thus, as we consider that, jealousy must be buried in order for us to lead. If there are going to be men who are congregations, elders, parents in a family, even in the business world, wherever we are, there is no room for this kind of thing, because someone who is jealous is someone who cannot love. Think about what Paul said, 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy. Hey, what a man who does not love the flock is a man who is going to be a poor excuse for an elder. A parent who does not love his children is going to be a poor excuse for a parent. Even in the business world, someone who doesn't have a love for those people is going to be a poor leader. Therefore, jealousy must be destroyed. And as Moses, we wish the work could be spread, that everybody could share in the blessings of the Lord. Which leads us to our final point. And that's annihilating ambition. Now, let me first of all say, sometimes ambition is used in a good sense. We want to do well at what we do. We encourage our kids to do that, don't we? Do well in school, get their first little part-time job, show your boss you're a good employee. That's all fine and good. But sometimes ambition can be in a very wrong direction. Sometimes we talk about ambition that has no barriers. And it means we are going to climb up that ladder, stepping on whomever we have to in the process. Moses was not that kind of man. And I think that's illustrated in several different ways, in the fact that his ambition was shown only in serving God, only in the obedience that he had. Now, a very interesting situation is over in Exodus 32. I'm going to tell you right here publicly, I don't know that I've got all the answers to chapter 32. God is angry with the people. He says to Moses, I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to raise up a nation through you. In other words, you're going to be the patriarch. But while I don't understand how God would do that, I know that God is right and that God is just, and he could have done that. That would be a win-win for Moses if he were an ambitious man. Two big things. I get rid of all of these nasty folks I've had to lead. Win number one. Win number two, I get to become the patriarch. Scoot over, Abraham. There's a new guy in town now, and that's me. And so they'll talk about Father Moses instead of Father Abraham. I wonder how many men would have fallen at that point. I believe in God's workings here, he's teaching Moses something about being an intercessor. And that may be a whole lot of this passage. But nonetheless, Moses does not do that. And it's so interesting to note Moses' reaction about this. He does not plead on behalf of the people. He doesn't say, Lord, you know they're actually pretty good folks. He knew they were rotten. He says, Lord, you are too good of a God to do this. He turns to God and he says, don't forget who you are and the promises you have made and what the Egyptians will say about you. Moses had no desire to become the patriarch of these people. And while Israel deserved death, he tried to give them life, and he cared more about them than himself. You'll recall just a little bit later in the chapter, he says, Lord, forgive them, or just blot my name out of your book of life. He says, as intercessor, I live with them or die with them. God says, Moses, I'll blot out who sins. That's a leader. That's someone who so identifies with the led that he overcomes pride, he gives no way to jealousy, and he says, I have no ambition other than to be the servant God has called me to be. We're a little short on time this morning, so I may save this for another day, but let me just say his biggest test was with his own siblings. It's interesting, in chapter 12, it says Moses was the most humble man on the face of the earth. You know, sometimes humble is translated afflicted. And I believe that might be a pretty good rendering, as his own brother and sister turn on him, but yet he even spares their lives. That's a man with no ambition who can not only put away the problems of the people, but when those of his very household turn against him. So what does all of this say for us? What is the message for leaders? The leader must view the led in the same way Moses viewed the ones he led. Here were people who clamored against him, but yet he had been given an assignment from God that he was going to carry out. And he didn't care if he had a good reputation, he didn't care about his name, other than no one could say he ever forsook what God had given him to do. And again, what a picture of Jesus we see in that. That even hanging on the cross, he could say, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." So when a man is an elder, or in any other kind of situation, and you got people who are causing you grief and causing you trouble, you gotta love them. You gotta care for their souls. How easy it would be to say, "Well, if you don't agree with me," and I tell you, preachers fall into bad, bad territory with this. "If you don't agree with me, I'll just go over here and we'll start our own new work and we'll do things our way." In other words, we'll do things my way. No. Moses didn't clamor to start a new tribe, to start a new nation, because he loved those people, even those people who caused him such grief. And the only way that happened is because he loved those who were led. A good elder can only be a good elder when he loves those he's leading. I had a friend, this was years ago, he was fairly new in preaching at that point, and kind of, you know, had optimistic ideas and bold statements. And he was presenting a sermon about this and made the point, elders ought to be praying for every member of the congregation. Kind of went his way and, you know, finished the sermon, moving on to the next. But an elder stopped and said, "Do you really believe that?" He said, "Yes, I really do." That elder said, "So do I." You know what they started doing? They started meeting on a very regular basis and by specific name praying for every member of that congregation. Now that's love. Because I'm going to tell you, elders have a lot on their plate. They're given responsibilities from everything from teaching curriculums down to working on the air conditioner. Here were elders who said, "Our job is to love this flock. Our job is to care for them." And so rather than spending time in other pursuits, they said, "We are going to meet and we are going to pray." That's leadership. That's getting rid of ambition. That's saying we are servants to the people who we lead. And that's exactly what Moses did. And whether we're elders or not, every Christian must learn this. If I am so caught up in my ambition that I am going to throw everybody under the bus, including the Lord, I am way too ambitious. If I'm saying my job is more important than God, my job is more important than serving Him, my job is more important than caring for my brethren, I am way too ambitious. I imagine there were a lot of days Moses longed for that mountainside with the quiet little sheep in the distance. But he was a man who said, "My ambition is to serve God." And that must be the key to us as well, because that is the only way we are ever going to learn how to love our neighbors. Thus, as you look at this great man, you see a man who got rid of his pride with the help of God, as God is very good at doing and helping to bring us down when we get lifted up. He was a man who had no jealousy for his position. He did not view others as rivals. And he was a man who could say, "I'm doing everything to carry out the work that God has given me to do." Now, this lesson has been somewhat directed toward men who may one day serve as elders. But this lesson is primarily directed for all of us. Because pride, jealousy, and ambition will destroy homes, will destroy relationships, will destroy children, will destroy husbands, will destroy wives. So everything Moses did, if we incorporate, we're going to find we can be servants just as God desires. Because what God has promised is that those who make themselves servants will one day be exalted. But let's allow this good man of years past to teach us about steadfastness and to teach us how to be the servants we need to be.